obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Hi, everybody. My name's Tony. I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be an alcoholic. I'd hate to be this fucked up for no reason. I'd like to thank alcoholics. I'd like to thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for my God. I would like to thank Pat for introducing me to Duane, and Duane for all the help on the phone, and I'd like to thank the committee for the warm welcome we got when we got here. Thank you. I grew up in Bakersfield, California. I wasn't born there, and I always make sure I point that out. I don't know why. This seems the thing to do. You know, I was born in Missouri, and I came out here a month later. So, whatever, you know. I had my family, we weren't real, we didn't have a lot of money. They worked in the fields. I wasn't born in a religious family. It's more like heathens, you know what I mean? We went to church once with my mom, and we embarrassed her so she didn't take us back. You know, which was fine with us, because I didn't like it anyway. You had to sit there a long time, and I didn't care for that. My dad was a bad drinker. He was crazy. He was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. My mom didn't drink. She drank once, and she never drank again. I won't say why. But it was nothing for my dad to be on the roof. And when my friends came home to our house, he'd be shooting us with a BB gun. And you know, we had to snoop and poop to get in the yard, you know. You know, my friends thought it was real funny. I didn't, you know. I got to where I didn't want to come home. You know, my mom was really, really angry, and I know why. Because my dad would drink and spend all the money, you know, and then we'd have to scrimp and save. So I stayed out of her way a lot, you know. She could get real physical, you know. She loves switches off the trees, you know. And that'll get you moving, boy. Didn't me, yeah. You know, I started drinking when I was about 13. We had a big family. There's about, my grandfather was, he had two wives. He had 13 kids by one wife and 13 kids by another wife. He worked the farm, so his kids were his crew, you know. He had his last kid when he was 75, you know. So I'm older than my aunt, you know. So I started drinking. They had a big party. They always having parties, and it was good when they had parties because they weren't fighting. And they asked us kids, you know, how about going and get me another beer and throw this one away? And there was always just a little bit, not much from my dad, but you could get a little bit out from some of the other relatives, and we'd pour it all in one glass and drink it. And I got drunk. I left home, went down to the Tion Theater about 3 miles away. Went into the theater, threw up, went across the street, passed out in the doorway of a hamburger joint. The cops came, took me to jail. And then I swore off forever that morning, the next morning. But, you know, I didn't drink again right away. But when I was 16, we started in high school. We would, on the weekends, we'd drink. And we'd drink, and I'd wreck my family's cars. I loved to drive and drink. I loved to drive on the... You know, I have a pretty fine mind for an alcoholic, you know, and I figured out if you drive on the right side, you won't hit somebody head on. but they're also, there's parked cars on the right side. And I never hit any car moving, but I heard a lot of parked cars. I was real quiet. I was just kind of a weird kid. My dad always asked my mom, "What's wrong with him? He's always crying. Every time I talk to him, he cries, you know." And that's just the way I grew up. And, I didn't do good in school. I did all right up until the eighth grade. And then when I went into high school, I couldn't read. And, I thought I was just stupid, but I couldn't read. So when it time to turn in tests, I wouldn't go to school. So, they gave me a choice, either go into juvenile hall or go into the service, you know. And at that time, my girlfriend had broken up with me, you know. And, it wasn't no ordinary breakup because, I loved her deeper than any deep love in the world, you know. And I was dying, and I got to watching Sands of Iwo Jima on the television. I thought, yeah, I'll become a Marine, So I signed up, and my folks signed for me because they're glad to get rid of me, And went down to San Diego, and they drove us down on a bus, We were all, hey, we're going to be Marines, all this. That guy, that drill instructor, got on that bus, and I never heard anybody scream that loud for that long in my life. He had me crying before the night was over, I wanted my mama, I didn't care for her that much when I was at home, but I wanted her that night, and it was a little bit too late, But, kind of get used to it, the yelling and screaming, and they teach you all kinds of stuff about, being a Marine and killing and stuff like that, And I love the hand-to-hand combat. They teach you hand-to-hand combat. And one thing they taught was, if you stick your finger in a guy's eye, you can pop it out. And I thought, yeah. And it was a bit, I got in a fight with this guy one time, and I'm telling you, you got to want to pop that eye out. I stuck my finger in his eye, and he got mad and beat the hell out of me. To this day, I don't stick my finger in nobody's eye, not even my own, So I got through that boot camp, and... It seemed like forever, but we got out and we went to Camp Del Mar there in by Oceanside and stayed there for a while. And we used to hitchhike all the way up to Bakersfield every weekend when we get liberty and drink all up there, and just raise all kinds. We were out of control. We were just out of control. We decided that we were the Bakersfield Mooners. And the way that got started is we were going over the ridge and some guy dropped his drawers and stuck it out the back window, And so we thought we were real cool and we were the Bakersfield Mooners. So we rented this apartment there in Bakersfield so we could go there on the weekends and live in there. It was, wasn't bad. It was $30 a month. Tells you what it was like, I remember one time coming home and as I drove up, one of the guys was sitting on our toilet in the middle of a road and the cars were going by, we were really out of control. And, that was really a wild time. And, so we decided we're going to go over to Okinawa and do our Okinawa tour over there. So we went over there, and we weren't there long, and they shipped us to Vietnam. And we landed on my 19th birthday. So I got, they came to the beach, and in the truck, and I thought, this ain't bad, So we got on the truck, they drove us a mile and said, "You're going up that mountain." God, it was my birthday. So I kind of fake passing out, and it's, the other guys carried all my stuff up the hill. I thought, man, that's all right, you know. Kind of chicken shit, but it was all right, you know. So, you know, I not much happened there. I got in a lot of trouble there. You know, I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get promoted, you know. But, you know, I mooned the company commander, you know, because he wanted to know what the mooners were about. So we were swimming in a little river, so I just went down and popped my doors off and let floated up to the top, you know. And I couldn't figure out why I didn't get promoted, you know. And one time I decided, you know, I wrote my congressman to find out why I couldn't get promoted. And if you're ever in the service, don't write your congressman. You know, I thought I got yelled at in boot camp, but I didn't get yelled at in boot camp. That guy screamed at me so loud, I wished I hadn't wrote, you know. Anyway, I got out of that and came home, and I was stationed at Camp Del Mar, and they made me a cook. They wanted me, I told them I didn't want to be a cook, I was a machine gunner. And he said, well, if you go back to Vietnam, you don't have to be a cook. And I thought, well, I love cooking, you know. And, you know, don't get me wrong, you know. And so I decided to be a cook, you know, and everything. And so I stayed there for a year and a half. And during that time, I met my first wife. And you know, I never could figure it out because I met her, I was behind a couch, drunk. And when I met her, I was climbing over the top of the couch to the front side. And I always told her, why would you marry somebody like that, drunk, and then bitch about it later, you know? I wouldn't marry somebody like that coming over the back of a couch. You know, I couldn't figure that out because I had fantasies. I fantasized a lot. When I grew up in the television. That's all I did was sit home and watch TV because my mom and dad were gone. They worked. And, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I could watch that TV, and then after the show, I could, you know, John Wayne, and my face almost felt like John Wayne looked. You know what I mean? That's how fantasized I could get into that TV. And you know, I got to thinking, you ever see that movie Love Story? And I thought, yeah, we're going to romp in the snow. We're going to go up in the snow and romp and love each other and all this shit. So I, you know, I was married about 2 weeks, and I came home, and she had this stuff, dinner on the table. And I didn't think. Certain things you don't say to your wife, and this is one of them. I asked her, what's this shit? You know, she said, this shit is in the garbage, and threw it in the garbage. And I thought, well, you know, that's why I drink. You know, for Christ's sake, this lady's crazy. She's nuts. And, man, I put that lady through hell, you know. My poor kid, you know. I didn't know how to be a dad or a husband, you know, because I didn't grow up that way. You know, my dad wasn't, you know, he was drunk all the time. You know, and, you know, I thought, you know, to love my kids, I'd come home drunk, grab them, hold them, you know, get them down on the floor, lick them in the face and stuff, and couldn't figure out why they didn't run to the door when I came home. Yeah, you ever been licked in the mouth by a drunk? It probably ain't fun. I never have had it done to me, but I don't want to. I just put her through hell. I could never, but I thank God for her because she got into Al-Anon, and she drove me nuts. She was so mean. You know, I'd get drunk, and the next morning, I liked to crawl underneath the table on the linoleum and just kind of roll around it because it was cool, you know, and kind of cool off the body, or I'd stick my head in a freezer and stuff, and she would get up, she'd stand right by the table, and she'd say, I hope you know what you did last night. And I said, well, I was there, you know, for Christ's sake. You don't have to tell me what I did. And she'd tell me, I hope you go out there one of these days and die. Man, I thought that was harsh. You know, I didn't want her to die, you know. So, you know, she was a Catholic, and I wasn't. So when she'd leave, I'd call the priest and tell her, well, she left, you know, and he'd call her and chew her out. So I did that about three times, and then she told him to go to hell, and I thought, you're going to hell. I'm not even religious, and I wouldn't tell the priest that. I felt right, you know, I felt righteous, you know. The fourth time, I kind of had to, it was desperate. So I decided, well, I'll become a Catholic, and that'll keep her, you know, I keep her from leaving. And I swear, I went through that catechism and stuff, and went through all those classes and stuff, and, you know, I got baptized and everything, got out of that church, and this gal come walking by with a real short shirt. Man, I almost broke my neck, and I thought, man, it didn't work. You know, I wasn't supposed to be looking at that, you know, and the rituals, I couldn't do the rituals. I'd be standing up, they'd be down, you know, I'd be on one page, they'd be on another. And I thought, man, this is too hard. You know, I had to go to to confession all the time, and I couldn't remember the prayers. And I'd have her, trying to coach me on the prayer, and then I'd get in there and I'd forget. And I quit going, you know. And in October the 12th, 1975, I think she had had enough of my crap. You know, and the reason I know that is because everything I owned was on the front porch. You know, and I thought, I ain't got nowhere to go, you know. So I wouldn't leave, you know, I wouldn't leave. So I told her, call Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, you call Alcoholics. I'm not going to call. I don't care if you get sober or not. And I thought, hey, I'm not afraid. I'm a big boy. I'll call them, you know, kind of challenge. So I called them, and it was about 6:30 in the morning, and I waited, and I waited, and I got weller and weller. You know, I was feeling a little bit better. So about, I kept running to the front window and looking out on the street, and he never did show up. About 2 o'clock, here he comes. And I thought, oh, my God. He had yellow pants on, a yellow shirt, white belt, white shoes, and I thought, Jesus Christ, we need to get him out of the yard and get him in the house, you know. I had an image to keep up, you know. I hadn't mowed the yard in 6 months, and I had my wife's Volkswagen out in the driveway. The fender was tied on with a rope, and I had an image to keep up. So he came in, and he did his little spill. And I don't remember what he said, but he said, go to Oildale every day for 90 days, and then call me every day for 90 days. And I did that. The reason I did that is I didn't want him coming back to my house, you know. And I didn't want him calling me unless I had all my stuff together, you know. Everything's fine, great, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, all that, you know. And I went to those meetings, and they're really weird people, you know what I mean? They told stuff that I wouldn't tell my friends. And I thought, man, I'd get embarrassed for them. You know, Jesus Christ. You know, there's women in the room. You can't be telling that kind of stuff, you know. And they wanted to hug you all the time. We had one guy, his name was Jim Haggerty. And I'd sit for the back, because right by the door, and as soon as that meeting was over, I was gone. He'd slip around the front, and as soon as I came out the door, he'd be right there, and he had his face right in mine. You know. Hugging on me and stuff, you know. I love you, and all this. And said, Jesus Christ. You love me, give me some money. You know? I didn't mind the women hugging me and stuff, but that's another story. So, I got to liking Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Yeah, I have all these crazy people just like at the bar, and you don't have to drink and get in trouble. So I got on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. I drove my wife nuts with that stuff. She was a real true Al-Anon alcoholic. She had some of the characters of an alcoholic. I would come home and I think, look, you know, I think about it, let's bowl. Next day I come home, I had bowling shoes, I had a bowling bag, I had a ball, and I was just saying, you know, and You know, and it wasn't long. We were bowling every day, 3 days a week on a league and practicing. And man, I never got so sick of bowling in my life. And, you know, I said one time, I says, you know what? I think tennis would be a lot of good exercise. Came home the next day, I had a tennis racket, tennis shoes, white shorts, white shirt, you know, and I put those white shorts and shirt on, and I looked in the mirror and I, yeah, you know, I kind of felt that swing, you know what I mean? Kind of felt that swing. I went outside, I even had a little tan, I thought, you know. Went outside, my legs swiveled up to about that big around, my arms about this big around, had no swing. We're at the tennis court. The kids are knocking it over the fence, and my wife's screaming. And I thought, this is not it, you know, this is not it. You know, I was trying to get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. Problem is, I had to keep busy. My head wouldn't leave me alone. Had all these great ideas, you know. Brilliant ideas. You know, I didn't know I was that smart, you know, and I found out later I wasn't, you know. So I had about 3 years sober, and I got to reading in the paper, soccer coaches wanted. Oh, yeah, you know, it's time to give back to the kids, you know, do things with the kids and stuff. So I got me and this other alcoholic, and we decided we're going to be coaches. So we got this team, you know, and I figured it out. I got God on my side, and I'm sober. We're going to the top.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
We didn't win a goddamn game for 3 years. You know, I got to hating that so bad, you know. And the parents were bad. Oh, they just drive you nuts. Why isn't Johnny playing? And you can't tell him because he's a piece of shit. That's why, you know. You can't play him, you know. I had to tell him, you know, I'm saving him for the big push. You know what I mean? I don't want him to be tired, you know. And we did that, and we did that. And, you know, I'd get all mad, and I'd throw my clipboard on the ground. It'd be windy, and my papers would be flying all the way down the other field, and I'd have to go. And I thought, this is really smart. This really shows a lot. And at the end of the season, the kids would come up and bring me a big old cake and tell them, and it just make me cry, and I feel like a... You know, a lot of those games, I had to go home and go to bed because I was so depressed. I wanted to commit suicide, you know. And so one year I thought, you know what? This year's going to be different. How about let's having a good time instead, you know. And I started coaching my daughter. And that year we won everything, just having a good time. How do you figure that? That doesn't even make sense, does it? And I learned a lot from doing that, you know. And, you know, I couldn't keep my mind still, you know. One time I'm driving down Edison Highway, and there's not much on Edison Highway. And God spoke to me. He said, go to Saudi Arabia. And I knew it was him because I wouldn't think about going to Saudi Arabia, you know. A month later, I'm in Saudi Arabia, and somebody was supposed to meet me there, and they didn't meet me there, and I didn't speak a lot of Arabic, and this cab driver kept saying, I'll take you. Oh, man, I'd watch those cartoons with the Arabs, and they had that big curved sword and stuff, and they're chopping people's heads off and stuff, you know. Too much TV when I was a kid. And so I was desperate. I had to go someplace. So I let him take me and took me right to it, you know, and I just, it was a good job, but I got, you know, I was too far away from the fellowship, you know, and I had everything I needed. I had the big book, I had 12 and 12, I had As Bill Sees It, I had the red book, I had the Living Sober, I had the Bible, and I went nuts. And I tried to make the medic there an alcoholic, you know. I gave him the big book and had him read it, you know, and then he went on vacation and they came back. And I said, how much drinking you do, you know? And he got, well, not much. Maybe I did, you know. He wasn't even an alcoholic. He kicked me out of his, throwed me out of his room. Don't ever come back to my room again. He said, you're the most negative son of a bitch I've ever met in my life. So I quit that job, and because I started thinking about drinking, and I wasn't going to do that. I wouldn't, you know, nothing's going to make me, you know, make me drink. And I was glad I did. I got into contracting, you know, and I learned today that I just wasn't a businessman. I wasn't mature enough, you know. Had this newcomer, we were working together, you know, had about 30 days. You know, you might not want to get too involved business-wise with newcomers, you know. Because this guy owed me $10,000 for a job. And he said, the newcomer, he said, I know a guy that can collect that money. Yeah, all right. So, you know, I should have known better when he told me his name was Crow. You know, so we met, and another thing I should have balked on, we met at a donut shop 9 o'clock at night. And I gave him $500. Never seen the Crow again. Now I'm out $10,500. And I thought, maybe it's time to maybe just drop that money before it adds up to more. And I did that. And, you know, I got out of that. And, you know, I continued to try to get into, you know, construction. It just didn't work for me. I just wasn't a businessman. And I went and went to work for Banks Pest Control. And I was a termite tech. And then I became a termite inspector, you know. And what that meant is I just kept crawling underneath houses and stuff, you know. You know, and you can really get to fantasizing underneath those houses. One time I seen this big leg, and I thought, I found a dead body, you know. And, man, I got my flashlight on, and I'm crawling. I go all the way around. I'm poking the ground, you know. And I get over there, and there's a pipe. I spent 2 hours underneath that house going around the circle trying to find this dead body. I was going to be a hero, you know what I mean? I mean, television, so-and-so found a dead body and all that. But I was a fool, you know. But I'd go in a lot of different yards, and I got to looking at, you know, gardens and stuff like that. And at the time, we had my second wife's son, had talked us into digging in the ground and putting a doughboy in the ground. I didn't want to do it, but we did it anyway. And so I got to looking at all these different landscape yards, and I got to looking at rock gardens and stuff, you know. So I got obsessed with rocks. You know, I don't know if any of you have ever been obsessed with stuff, but I got obsessed with rocks. Everywhere I looked, there was rocks. So I found myself down below the bluffs, down by the river, picking up rocks out of the river and stuff and putting them in my car and driving them home. But it takes a long time to make a rock garden going down to the river. So I thought, well, I'll just order some rocks. Now, I didn't know how much 3 ton of rocks was. So I ordered 3 tons of rocks. And I came home and I thought, oh, my God. Yeah, I got to move all those rocks. So I got all those rocks moved, you know, and the lady from down the street, she said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm making a rock garden, you know. And so she said, could I see it? Yeah. So she came back there and looked at it, and she said, man, that's a masterpiece. Man, I lit up like a Christmas tree. That's what I want. I want a little recognition, you know. And my dogs, they didn't know that it was a masterpiece. So they started pooping in my masterpiece. You know, and you don't scoop poop out of rocks. You got to pick that stuff up bit by bit. You know, I didn't think to put plastic down either. So I got weeds coming up. I got poop in my rocks. I wouldn't even go out in the yard for 2 years because every time I went out there, I wanted to commit suicide. You know, my biggest problem my whole life has been right here. Brilliant ideas, you know, brilliant ideas. And finally, you know, I told my wife, we need to get rid of that pool. No. So like one of our cats got blown into the pool at a windstorm, and I found him out there kind of just floating, you know. So she let me get rid of the pool. It's fine. So I just took all the rocks, threw them in that hole, and covered it up. You know. And, you know, I found out that you need to water the ground a little bit, let it settle. So I got some of that that turf, that AstroTurf, and put it on there. And after about 6 months, it sunk about 3 inches, you know. And I thought, that's good with me. That's fine. I love that. I love it just the way it is. And I still have a few rocks left, but I've been thinking about getting rid of them, you know. And I kind of watch my brain, you know. I got to kind of watch my brain. Lately I've been thinking about, you know what, those little pea rocks. You know, I could put those down. And I thought, no, just shut up. Shut up. You know. They got to, you know, I was dry for a long time, you know, before I got sober, you know. But the thing that saved me is I loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I loved everything about it. The people, what goes on, you know, and that helped me stay sober during all that crazy stuff. Times, you know, I mean, I had a lot of problems with my wife, you know, and not with her. I had problems with me along with her. She had problems with me, and you know, I couldn't stay home. I didn't like staying home. I had to be gone. I had to be gone all the time, you know, and I had a lot of anger, you know, a lot of anger, probably from rocks, you know. You know, carry enough rocks around, you're going to get angry. You know, and so one time I was home, I kind of had like a little body, out of body experience. I could hear myself and see myself yelling at her, and I thought, you wouldn't even do this to a newcomer, but yet you're doing it to your wife, you know. And I thought, I don't want to do that no more. And I thought, you know, and I got to thinking about newcomers. And I thought, well, you know what? From now on, I'm going to treat her like she's the most important, special person in the world. And today we have a wonderful, and I still do that, you know. I'm kind of retired, so I do the shopping, I do the washing, I do the house cleaning, whatever. Whatever I can do to make her comfortable, you know. And about, you know, I got me a real good sponsor. He came up with me, you know. And about six and a half years ago, I had a spiritual experience. A friend of mine gave me a Sumi art kit. You know, that Japanese painting, you know. And I made 10,000 lines, you know. Can't help from getting obsessed. You know, went down, got me a book, and I'm grinding ink and stuff like this, and I'm making lines, you know. Looking, I thought, it don't work, you know. And I thought, I know what the key is. You have to have the right brush. If you have the right brush, you don't even need talent, you know. So I got online, and I found a lady in Burbank that sold brushes, and I thought, yeah, Yeah. And it caught my eye that she also gave art lessons, you know, Japanese brush painting. I mean, Chinese brush painting. And I thought, well, I don't want to go all the way down there and spend that kind of money. So I got those brushes and I got them home, got, you know, all ready to go. And it wasn't the brushes, you know. God damn. You know, so I finally got enough guts, you know, to go down to Burbank and take an art lesson. And I'm like this, you know, I don't want nobody seeing my stuff, you know, because there's a real artist there, you know, and all this. And after that class, it's like the beauty of the world lit up for me. And I fell in love with Chinese brush painting. And I've been doing it ever since, you know. And, you know, I attribute it to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I didn't do anything before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't even go out of Bakersfield to work because I was afraid my wife would leave me and I wouldn't, you know, while I was gone. You know, I didn't trust her, you know. She had a lot of stuff on me, you know. You know, any time they tell you they're going to hate you, they may not stick around if you leave. So you better stick around. Watch them. And, you know, it's about 6 years ago, me and my wife, my second wife, we got to go to China for 8 days. And, you know, spend 8 days there and tour the country on a bus and stay in real, you know, five-star hotels and everything. You know, it was great, you know. And, you know, it was just perfect for us because we didn't have a lot of money. And the trip for two was only $2,600. And, you know, that made an impression on me because I see it in other people. I see that kind of stuff happening over and over in Alcoholics Anonymous. I see ladies getting their kids back when they could barely walk from alcohol or drugs. You know, I see people going to school and becoming active members of society, you know. And, you know, I realize that my life never really changed until I accepted responsibility for my own actions. And that if I'm not the problem, there is no solution, you know. And I'm glad that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a God today that, you know, I really love, and He loves me, you know. Sometimes not as much as I'd like, you know. Sometimes His ideas are a little off from mine, you know. I don't know that He likes rocks that well, but I won't hold that against Him, you know. I'm about out of anything to say. So God bless you and thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.